Hello and welcome to PI in a Pod, the podcast where we delve behind the pensions issues of the week and work out what really should matter to you. Today I'm joined by Bob Scott, and he's here today to talk about LCP's annual Accounting for Pensions report. Welcome, Bob.
Morning.
So we've had this big report out this week, and you know, it's been amidst a perfect storm of stories in the press about DB pension schemes, you know, for BHS and Tata Steel. And the big headline that I've seen reported, Sky News, BBC, everywhere, is that FTSE companies are paying five times more in dividends than pension contributions. That's obviously quite shocking, but can you maybe just, to start with, take me through some of the headline findings from the report?
Sure. Well, it's not been a very happy time for pension funds these last few months, culminating in the cut in interest rates, the expansion of the quantitative easing program, which has led to much bigger deficits that have been widely reported. You mentioned the dividends that companies pay. Now, in one sense, you say five times more in dividends than pension contributions. You'd say, well, hang on, shouldn't they be topping up their pension funds first? There's another way of looking at it too, which is to say that these are large, successful companies in the main. They can afford to pay dividends to shareholders, and some of whom are other pension funds. And so it's perhaps reassuring that they're generating so much cash and so much profit that they can pay those dividends as well as cover their pension fund deficits. So people in those pension funds should perhaps be reassured that they're backed by successful companies.
Yeah, and I think the report also found that the contributions had gone up from last year. So it's not like these pension schemes are abdicating their duty or not contributing. You know, the contributions are going up, is that right?
That's right. I mean, companies are paying contributions, and I think the issue here is over what period they clear their deficits. Now, if we look at companies perhaps not in the FTSE 100, companies that have large deficits and that are paying dividends to shareholders, I think we could see some pressure from the regulator, perhaps from government, in the wake of BHS, to say to those companies, hang on a minute, you should be allocating more resources to the pension funds rather than to shareholders.
Yeah, and we've got an investigation, haven't we, by the Select Committee for Work and Pensions that's looking into DB schemes in general and how companies are funding them. Do you think that, you know, with everything that's gone on with BHS and indeed Tata Steel, that we might see that there might be some legislation change or anything like that to try and force companies to put more money into their pension schemes?
I think there'll be calls for that, and the regulators already signalled that they would welcome having some new powers, particularly where there's corporate activity, mergers and acquisitions. I think that urge to force companies to pay more will be tempered by some other factors. I mean, first of all, the more money that companies pour into their defined benefit schemes, the more tax relief they get and the less tax the Chancellor collects. So that's a factor. The Treasury might not want too much money going into DB schemes. Secondly, and our report also showed that the amount that companies contribute to their defined contribution schemes, which cover the majority of their employees, is rather less than the amount they pay to their defined benefit schemes. And tipping even more into defined benefit schemes would exaggerate that position. And money that goes into defined benefit schemes is money that's not invested in the wider economy, in the business, and that might stifle economic growth. So yes, there will be a push for more tougher regulation, but I think that will be tempered by those other factors.
And I guess we don't really want companies, as you sort of touched on, we don't really want companies putting all of their money into their pension schemes because they need to be viable businesses and they need to grow, right?
Yeah.
But I think it is true that, you know, an awful lot of these, of the FTSE 100 companies, but also of companies generally, have really, really big pensions deficits, sometimes with quite long recovery plans. So if it's not about people diverting all their dividends into their pension scheme, what sort of solutions should we be looking at?
I think the pension scheme should get a fair share of the available cash, and I think that by and large, that is what happens. There have been some exceptions, and BHS was one where it's highlighted all those dividends they paid in the early years when the company was successful meant that when the pension scheme fell into difficulty, the company wasn't able to support it. So I think it's those sorts of situations that that we need to address. The majority of companies are able to pay out large dividends because they're successful and growing, and if too much of that were diverted to their pension funds, then that might stifle their success.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think, you know, it's what is true, as we've touched on, is that, you know, schemes are contributing, as you said, their fair share. I guess the concern that people will have is, despite the fact that they're contributing their fair share, we're still seeing deficits increase. Now, I don't know how much of that, is that a Brexit thing or is it a general trend?
I think Brexit and the rate cut and the expansion of the QE program have all come at about the same time to have a very negative effect on pension funding. And some pension funds will have been affected more than others. Those that have hedged their liabilities and have put in place protection against changes in interest rates will have fared better than most. And in fact, the FTSE 100 companies generally, I think, are better hedged and better managed than smaller funds that may not have access to the same resources and expertise.
And I guess, you know, longevity rates have come into play on this as well. People are living longer, so the amount of money that those pension schemes are going to have to pay out has increased, right?
Yes, that has been the trend in the last 15 years or so. People have been living longer and longer. But in the last couple of years, we've just seen that trend levelling off. And in this year's survey, we've seen some companies that are actually showing lower life expectancy assumption this year than they did last year. And the ONS statistics show that the number of deaths in recent years has been greater than expected. So maybe we've reached a bit of a plateau with that. Who knows?
So I guess, yeah, that's, you know, that's reassuring for pension schemes in terms of if longevity estimates aren't continuing to shoot up, you know, they can manage their deficits a bit more. But it doesn't change the fact that there's still these huge, huge deficits. And one of the things that you've suggested is that perhaps we let pension schemes change the way that they calculate their deficits so that they look, the way that they increase pensions payouts so that they switch from RPI to CPI, which would, you know, make things a lot more comfortable on them. My understanding of it is that at the moment, whether or not a pension scheme is allowed to do that is based around some pretty arbitrary wording in their legal documents, so whether or not they specify which one and things like that. Would this shift, if we allowed them to make the shift, would it solve the problem?
Well, I think it would help, certainly. Companies that are struggling to pay off their deficits and being required to increase pensions in line with RPI or sometimes indices or measures that are even greater. So back in 2011, the government changed the statutory index from RPI to CPI, and in fact RPI is no longer a national statistic. It is slowly being discredited. So as you have highlighted, there are pension funds that have these wording in their rules that means they are required to stick to the old measures. Other funds had a windfall in 2011 because they could immediately go to the new CPI. What we're suggesting is levelling the playing field and giving a statutory override to those companies to switch to CPI subject to important safeguards. And I think the primary safeguard would be that the trustees agree. It would be something that could only be exercised jointly by employer and trustees, and so it would have to be in the members' interests.
I think that makes sense. And I guess one of the other things I wanted to touch on that comes out of this report is, you know, it's not just that these DB deficits are, you know, kind of millstones around companies' necks. There's also an element of intergenerational unfairness in this. I mean, one of the things that you found was that companies are putting twice as much money into their DB pensions as they are their DC pensions. But as you mentioned earlier, DC pensions cover off the most of the workforce, and in particular, younger people tend to be enrolled there. Yeah. Is that something that makes it more important than ever that we kind of sort out this deficit issue?
I think that's a very important point, because people who are now in their 30s and 40s are building up pensions typically on a defined contribution basis, and often with contributions that are relatively low. In some cases, their employer may be paying no more than 3% of their earnings. Mm-hmm. Now, to provide a typical final salary pension now would cost something like 50% of salary. And that is a huge difference. It shows how fortunate the people are who have final salary pensions, but it also shows the gap between the amount that many people are having paid to their pension and what they would need to have a comfortable retirement. So something to help address that balance would be, I think, very important.
And I guess, yeah, bringing it back, a couple of the things that we talked about, so we talked about perhaps some pressure on companies to look at their dividend structure, although we agree that that might not always be the best thing because we want companies to flourish. There's the switch from RPI to CPI, which might help, you know, in terms of increases. Are there other things that pension schemes should be looking at? I mean, I know a lot of people pre-Brexit didn't hedge as much as they should have done because they were expecting interest rates to go up. You know, is that something schemes should be looking at, hedging? Are there other things that they could be doing to try and deal with this problem?
Well, I think every pension scheme should re-examine its hedging program in the light of Brexit, the recent falls, and to make sure that it's fit for purpose and it's dynamic, so that as things change, they automatically adapt their hedging. And it is a scheme-by-scheme thing, because for some schemes, a high level of hedging is right. For others, they can't afford that. So that's one thing. And then I think there's other ways of managing liabilities that companies have done in the past and should continue to look at. So offering people transfer values. I think the typical transfer value now might be 30 times the pension because of the low yields. Mm-hmm. So that's more attractive than it was. Offering people the opportunity to exchange future pension increases for higher pension.
Yeah.
Offering people coming up to retirement perhaps a partial transfer value. So taking a lump sum that they can go and invest and keeping a certain level of income. So those sorts of things which help people to have a better package of benefits, but which ease the pressure on companies funding them at the same time.
That makes sense. And I think, you know, because this is a problem that's going to roll on, and I know that, you know, it's been an interesting time for pensions, because for the first time that I can remember, you can't read a newspaper without reading something about pensions. And I don't think that BHS and Tata Steel will be the end of this. I mean, I know that the Pensions Policy Institute highlighted a whole load of schemes out there who are never going to make it. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, this is going to continue dominating. Is there a risk that if more and more pension schemes collapse, that we'll have too much pressure on companies to look at things like their dividend structure and not enough kind of forward-thinking, long-term change? Is there a risk of kind of knee-jerk reactions, particularly from a regulatory point of view?
I think there is a risk of that, and certainly you've mentioned the PPI report, and others have highlighted the number of schemes that are in potential difficulty with employers that won't be able to fund them, and which, if nothing else happens, could end up in the PPF. And I wonder whether there's a middle way that gives people better benefits than they'd get in the PPF. It enables the company to continue to operate without going insolvent. Although it doesn't provide members with their full benefits, it does provide them with something better than they'd get if their company went insolvent. And we've seen some examples of this. It is a cumbersome process. As Tata Steel highlighted, the legislation enables these things to happen, but it is a very complex, cumbersome and expensive process. And I wonder whether a bit of forward thinking might not have a more straightforward process than the current one, which is involves the regulator, the PPF, and a lot of expensive advice and time. So something like that, I think, would be a jolly good idea.
Lovely. And I mean, is there anything else? I mean, we've talked a little bit about what you think should happen. Is there anything else that, when you put this report together, what's your kind of dream for what happens next? If you were in charge of everything, what would be the next sort of steps on this?
Well, I think we've talked about a lot of the issues that need to be addressed, in my view. The provision that people are making for their retirement isn't adequate, and there's a lot of factors that affect that and a lot of things that could be done to improve that. And we've also just talked about schemes that aren't going to make it and how we can recognise that and take steps before they inevitably fall into the pension protection fund. And then I think keeping companies looking sensibly at their pension schemes, looking at the investments that they hold, looking at the benefits that they provide, and making sure all the sums add up. So I think there are steps that can sensibly be taken, and I mean, I would hope the new pensions minister has a good close look at some of these.
Great, thank you very much. I've been Sarah Bumwell, host of PI in the Pod and digital editor of Pensions Insight and Engaged Investor magazine. I've been joined by Bob Scott, senior partner at LCP and the author of the report, Accounting for Pensions. Thank you for listening.